Thanks for listening to The Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for The Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Oh, here we go. Packed on a Tuesday. Welcome in live in Los Angeles. This is The Herd, wherever you may be, however you may be listening, Fox Sports Radio, iHeartRadio, and FS1. 1 hour from now, The Herd hierarchy, top 10 teams in the NFL, painstakingly, team by team, pouring over that this morning, and Joy Taylor is joining me. Joy, how are you?
I'm good. What was that last night? That was hard to watch at times.
It was not artistic. It was not grand.
Well, for the Seahawks, it was. But
yes. So I want to start the show with this. I tell my kids this all the time. Solve the problem. I'm not into victimhood. I don't want to hear about your issues. Solve the problem. I don't hang around negative people. Solve the problem. Yap yap yap. Lie. I don't get this. I don't get that. All right. Nothing's perfect. Solve the problem. It's amazing in the NFL how few teams could solve their issues and can't. Green Bay can't stop the run. Why haven't they solved it this season? You can trade up to week 8. Coach guys, Chicago offensively needs more juice when Tariq Cohen got hurt. Why can't Ryan Pace, the GM, and Matt Nagy? Why can't you solve the problem? What you watched last night is Seattle, a Hall of Fame coach, and probably John Snyder, a borderline Hall of Fame general manager, you watch them solve a problem. So Seattle, we know they have stars. Bobby Wagner's maybe the best linebacker in football. Russell Wilson, one of the best quarterbacks in football. But they had no pass rush. And last night, they solved it. And it wasn't just Philadelphia. They now have 19 sacks in the last 4 games. 5 more than anybody in the NFL, including the Steelers. Now, third down, they were awful. Their offensive line is middle of the pack. It's not atrocious, but it's not great. But when Chris Carton is running, this is a Super Bowl team. There's 4 key ingredients historically to win a Super Bowl. Got to have the right coach. Got to have the right quarterback. You have to have some semblance of a pass rush to make star quarterbacks and the other team uncomfortable. And increasingly, got to have some playmakers. Got to occasionally get an easy touchdown. We saw that with Kansas City over the weekend. You know, the good teams have some playmakers. And Seattle has all of this stuff. 19 sacks, 4 games. And this is what's interesting. So Seattle knew going into the season, we don't have much of a pass rush. And so what did they do? Their general manager, John Snyder, said, all right, let's go get Carlos Dunlap. He started squawking. He was unhappy. And they gave up a nothing pick to get him. And then right before the season, they gave too much up for Jamal Adams. But they got Jamal Adams as a safety, but plays like a linebacker, and he loves to blitz. And then they had drafted a first-round defensive lineman last year, L.J. Collier, from TCU. Didn't do much, hurt his first year. Second year now, he can play. But they solved an issue. And now Seattle, to me, we know there's 3 really good teams in the NFL. Chiefs, Steelers, Saints. Seattle is 4 to me, along with other teams. But they did something that very few teams in the NFL. Folks, you can trade until week 8. Green Bay can't stop running games. Make a move. They didn't. Seattle had a pass rush issue. No more. They solved it. Trent Dilfer and I talked about this yesterday. This is what Pete Carroll does. This is why he'll end up in the Hall of Fame. And Pete can drive me nuts on some things. And Seattle's GM sometimes butchers first-round picks. A couple years ago, took a running back. I didn't get it. He's a bust. Still don't get it. But it happens. It's not science. It's drafting. They're young kids. They're 20, 21. Some have heart. Some have soul. Some have a work ethic. Some don't. You can't read their palms. You don't know exactly what you're getting in most cases. But in the end, Seattle has solved a primary issue. Why doesn't Chicago? Your offense needs juice. Solve it. You got 2 months to make trades. Green Bay can't stop the run. Solve it. Here's Trent Dilfer talking about this yesterday.
Everybody in the talent and coaching business understands the acquisition of talent is important. Where most miss it is the development of that talent. They didn't panic when they weren't getting a pass rush. Now they went out and acquired more talent, but then you have to develop that talent. You have to have it mesh with the rest of your players on defense too. They've tweaked their system a little bit. They're not going to say, we're just going to do this system because this is what we do. They're going to tweak their system around that talent that they've brought in and that they've developed.
By the way, in September, Seattle had 5 total sacks and allowed 500 yards a game in September. In October, they allowed 460 yards a game. In November, they have 22 sacks and are allowing 340 yards a game. Every month, they coach it up, they acquire, they get better, and you watch Seattle last night, and to me, they look like a Super Bowl team because they got the coach, the quarterback, the pass rush, and the playmakers. Not saying they're going to win the Super Bowl, but those are the 4 things you have to have, and one of them was missing in September and early October, and now they've solved it. Like, just because you start a project here, you got to be able to pivot. That's what every great business book tells you. Every company you start within 6 weeks, you're like, all right, we've got to pivot off that. Amazon, Netflix, look, all of them. They pivot off stuff. And it's like Seattle, if Seattle gets to the NFC Championship, they would not have, if John Snyder and Pete Carroll wouldn't have been willing to move off. They're kind of, you know, here's what we have. We got to keep elevating and improving and acquiring and trading. And ask Carson Wentz. What you saw, now you say, well, the offensive line for Philadelphia, they have 19 sacks in 4 games. That's 5 more than any other team in the National Football League, including the Pittsburgh Steelers, who have a great pass rush. All right, I want to go to this. I'm going to defend Carson Wentz in about 5 minutes, but let's do this first. So I see another public wrestling match. Bruce Arians came out yesterday and said, well, Tom Brady's been calling the plays for the last month. Look at me. Tom Brady's. Oh, boy. Let me just say this. Guys love to give themselves credit. And for the first time in my broadcast career, you guys are not giving yourself credit. Oh, you rush to Twitter to tell me how special you are, all 4 of your followers. But today, men, I am asking you to give yourself credit. So let's look at Tom Brady's numbers this morning for Tampa. Oh, they're just utterly disastrous. Oh, wait, they're not. 28 touchdowns, 11 picks, 65% completion percentage, and a passer rating of 95. Oh, those are excellent. Now, they have been at times inconsistent, and their running game does disappear, but his numbers are on pace to crush his numbers last year. He's already got more touchdowns than last year, a better completion percentage than last year, and a better passer rating than last year. And oh, by the way, if you go to your little pocket schedule, take out the first game against the Saints, bunch of new guys and no camp, I'll just take that game out. They've scored 31, 28, 38, 38, 45, 25, 46, 24, 24. 2 stinkers, Bears and Saints. Ooh, bad actors have bad movies. Good actors, excuse me, have bad movies, and great bands have bad albums. Ooh, Tom Brady with no OTAs and no camp and no preseason had a couple of stinkers. 1 against the Bears and 1 against Saints, top 2 or 3 team in the league. Okay, remember when this trade was made? All you people said the same thing. Listen, if Tom can be productive but just cut down on Jameis Winston's mistakes, it's going to be a 10-6 team. Oh, check, check. He's on pace to throw half the interceptions of Jameis Winston and be more productive. Tampa was 7-9 last year. They'll be favored in all 4 of their next games. Let's say they win 3, they're 10-6. Oh, what? That's what you predicted. Their offense is number 7 in scoring, about what we thought they would be. Yes, they've been inconsistent. And yes, their running game can disappear. And I don't think Bruce Arians and Tom Brady, I don't think they're the perfect fit. I just don't. I think they're old school to, you know, detailed, more rigid. But we've moved into silliness territory. This thing is largely what you predicted, what I predicted, what Joy predicted. We didn't think they were going to be the Chiefs. We didn't think they were going to beat the Chiefs. Most of us did not think they would be as good as the Ravens. They're better. We didn't think they were going to go 13-3 like Green Bay. Many of you thought. I didn't. Many of you did. Most of you didn't think they would be the Seahawks. They may end up with a better record. Give yourself credit. We can do all this public arguing, Arians and Brady. His numbers are really, really good. They're like Tom Brady prime numbers. Take out a Randy Moss here or two. He's cut down on the Jameis mistakes. That's exactly what we hope for. And we all predicted 9-7 or 10-6. They have a chance to go 11-5. This is a lot of noise and silliness. Now, this is a good team occasionally excellent Green Bay game, Carolina game, that can be inconsistent, shocker, no preseason, and sometimes forgets they have Leonard Fournette and the really speedy Ronald Jones. But in a world where guys rush to Twitter with 9 followers to tell you how brilliant they are, today I'm giving you a pass. You nailed it. This is exactly what we thought they'd be. Exactly what we thought they'd be. And by the way, they are a top 8-10 team. That's what 9-7 generally is in the NFL. All right. It seems impossible, inexplicable, but I will defend Carson Wentz. I know. I am on an island. I am on an island, but I will defend him, plus Herd Hierarchy coming up top of next hour.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
CarShield.com, the code is Herd. Save 10%, deductible may apply, a warranty when yours runs out. So Carson Wentz is not very good right now. His mechanics, his confidence, his accuracy all stink as the Eagles lost last night. 25 of 45, 2 TDs a pick, a passer rating of mid-70s. Not very good, very backup-ish. I'm going to do the virtually impossible because I think it's very possible and defend Carson Wentz. He signed a big contract. Howie Roseman, the GM, signed him to a big contract. And there was some risk involved. He was young, it was expensive, and he had had injuries. So let's start with that. But I defended it, and I still do today. Why? It's very easy this morning to wake up throwing pots and pans. Let's go to Carson Wentz right before the contract was signed. So what was his trajectory like? Year one, passer rating, 79. Year two, 101. Year three, 102. Oh, my. That's an A quarterback. He's getting better. His completion percentage went from 62 in year one to 69. Oh, my. His passing yards a game went from 236 to 253 to 280. Oh, my, he's getting better. That was the trajectory. Then he signed it, and here's the following year. 27 TDs, 7 picks, 4,000 yards, 64%, 9-7 throwing to deck chairs and scout team guys. And now you're all bailing. I'd like to remind you he's missing his 2 top offensive linemen, a Pro Bowl tackle and a Pro Bowl guard. Andre Dillard, Washington State left tackle, drafted last year, hurt not playing. Zach Ertz, tight end out. Alshon Jeffrey, receiver shot. And Jalen Reagor can't separate. Other than that, it's just rainbows and birds chirping. I don't know what's wrong. Does he have a backup quarterback complex? There's a statue of Nick Foles outside the stadium, and they drafted Jalen Hurts in the second round. And he's the only starting quarterback in the league that's asked about his backup every single week. Carson Wentz last night asked about his backup, asked about quarterback, asked about starting after the game.
There's been a lot of talk and speculation about you possibly getting benched or something like that. Does that weigh on you at all? Do you think about that at all? And did that occur like during the game? Any of that come up?
Yeah, I mean, I said it last week, you know, this is what you sign up for. And you know, as a quarterback, ever since you're a kid, you know, you're prepared for any of those. Nothing's ever guaranteed. And so for me, I don't think about that, though. I just try and go out and be the best player I can be in practice, prepare my tail off, compete my tail off, and, you know, hopefully we can get this thing turned around.
By the way, Seattle's good. He lost to them last night. Ooh. He's not really good right now. His idol, Brett Favre, even criticized him and said he'd take Foles. They draft a backup who he gets asked about every week. The statue of Nick Foles, I don't know if it's in his head. But I know Eli Manning, year 4, led the NFL in picks. 56% completion percentage. They were talking in New York about getting rid of him. They didn't. He won the Super Bowl that year. Peyton Manning, the superior quarterbacking brother, in year 4 went 6-10. 26 TDs, 23 picks. Nobody talked about getting rid of him, but it's not linear. Great actors have bad movies. Great bands, again, have bad albums. I don't know what it is, but look at the trajectory of why they signed him. Passer rating, completion percentage, yards per game, up, 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 getting better. Big arm, excellent size, trajectory excellent. And then they signed him last year, and the team physically fell apart. And he was 9-7, 27 TDs, 7 picks, 4,000 yards, and 64% completion percentage. And this year he's missing his best tight end. The rookie receiver's been hurt, not what we thought. Alshon Jeffrey's over the hill. best guard, best tackle out, and the guy they drafted at left tackle from Washington State is hurt and can't play. Frank Reich, his best coordinator, is gone, now a head coach, and an excellent one in Indianapolis. Go ahead, bail, do it. Trade him away, fine. I'm not. I've been watching this game long enough. They wanted to trade Eli. Peyton Manning was awful year four. Brett Favre threw 20 picks, what, seven times? I'm guessing off the top of my head. I think he'll get it right, and I don't know what the problem is, but just wanted to add some context. Here's Joy with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
The Texans will be without wide receiver Will Fuller and corner Bradley Roby for the remainder of the 2020 season. Both have been suspended 6 games for PED violations.
Not
will
good.
Be out the rest of this year, yes, and miss the first game of 2021. Fuller announced on Instagram that he was suspended after taking what he said was prescribed medication that he thought was permissible. Roby also released a statement saying he unknowingly used a product that was contaminated with a banned substance by the NFL. So no one knows how they got, they know where they got them, but they didn't know that they were banned by the NFL. So they will both be out for 6 games. Another loss for Deshaun Watson, obviously.
Who's playing great, by the way.
Playing great. But,
The winner is Miami.
Yes.
The Miami Dolphins, when you're well run, it seems like you get all these crazy breaks. And when you're poorly run, it seems like you can't get one. So Miami has Houston's first round pick, and Houston now will probably lose games, more of them. And guess who benefits? The Miami Dolphins will now have another great pick.
Yeah. I mean, now, obviously, the Dolphins couldn't have predicted that Will Fuller and Roby would be suspended
right.
for the final 6 games.
But however, when you're well run and make the right trades, you benefit from them.
Luck favors the prepared.
Yes.
And that is where the Dolphins are right now. But I do feel bad for Deshaun Watson. It feels like there's always something. And, you know, I really hope that this does. I hope that they're able to turn things around in Houston for his sake, because I do think he has a lot of potential, and I'd hate to see his career squandered by a terribly run organization.
He's had a great last month. Yeah, he's not the issue.
He's not the issue.
But you know what, Joy? We've said this. Sometimes it's not fair. Aaron Rodgers is a great quarterback. He goes to a team without an owner that's not an attractive free agent market. It's not fair. It's reality. Tony Romo gets undrafted. Tony Romo goes to Dallas. The offensive line gets great about the time he gets hurt, and Dak gets the great offensive line. Kansas City Mahomes gets Andy Reid, great weapons, and a great GM. And Deshaun Watson now doesn't have a real coach. Well, I mean, he's got an interim coach, and the GM was the coach. And so it's just like life. Brady got very lucky. Owner, defense, O-line, coach. And that's why Brady won a bunch. And by the way, Joe Montana got lucky. But the reality is, what if Troy Aikman doesn't get Jimmy Johnson as a coach? Troy Aikman is Troy Aikman, who was 9-7 most of his career. Like, I feel bad for Deshaun, but this is the way the NFL works.
Yeah, I mean, life's not fair.
It's not.
I think he has the potential. He's a great player. He has the potential to be spectacular if he was in a situation that was functional and they could put the right pieces around him and get things stable. I mean, this is just another example of what happens in Houston, and it's going to directly affect him and benefit the Dolphins. So the Ravens and Steelers game has been postponed another day. It will now take place on Wednesday at 3:40 Eastern.
I love this, actually.
This will force more changes to next week's schedule. The Pittsburgh and Washington game that was originally on Sunday will now be played on Monday at 5 Eastern. And the Baltimore-Dallas game that has been pushed, what was on Monday, has now been pushed to Tuesday at 8 Eastern on Fox.
So by the way, so I get Lamar Jackson and the Ravens against the Dallas Cowboys next Tuesday.
Yes.
And I'm supposed to be unhappy with that?
Oh, no, I love it.
I'm deliriously.
The players are probably extremely frustrated, and the coaches, I'm sure, hate it, because this is, you know, it's completely routine changing, but this is the world that we're living in. Like, everyone has to make adjustments, and that's what this season has been. Like, teams that are able to make adjustments and figure those things out, this is what the world is. Like, everyone is trying to figure things out on the fly, and the NFL's done an amazing job of moving all these things around and, you know, trying to protect the players, giving them time to recover, and also not have to extend the season. They're trying to get all the games played without having to extend the season. Now, Ravens running backs Mark Ingram and J.K. Dobbins will now be eligible to play against the Steelers because their 10-day isolation period is over. However, they're still going to be without Lamar Jackson, Mark Andrews, Willie Snead, Calais Campbell, and Matt Jodun. So they're still without their a lot of key players, but it is good that they're getting those two running backs back. Finally, Jared Goff obviously struggled taking care of the ball. He's been struggling recently with
that. A real fumble issue in the last month. Yes.
In the Rams' last two losses to the Dolphins and Steelers, he had 7 total turnovers. But Sean McVay says he never considered benching his quarterback.
Of course.
If I thought it was going to be the best thing to just take a deep breath and step away, then I'd say, you know, maybe, but not in either of those situations, because both of those reflected, you know, kind of having an opportunity where there was enough plays made to get back in it. And so yesterday that was never part of the consideration, nor was it really for Miami, to answer your question.
Guys.
By the way, he's 40-18 as a starter under McVay.
Let's just slow down. Slow it down. Bench Jared Goff, which is what we're talking about.
40-18 in the toughest division in football.
Listen, I am an extremely impatient person.
Yeah.
Okay. Ridiculously impatient. However, I do think it's important to maintain some level of self-awareness. Benching Jared Goff. Okay. For who? You want to know who? Would you like me to read their backups credentials for you, Colin? It's John Wolford.
Oh, I love him.
Me too. No regular season NFL experience. Was signed as an undrafted free agent to the Jets in 2018 and played in one preseason game.
Oh, that's the option.
He played in the AAF in 2019 for the Arizona Hotspots.
Oh, those games were on pay-per-view. I watched every one of them.
And joined the Rams in 2019 after the AAF suspended operations and played in 4 preseason games. Bench Jared Goff. Guys, I don't know anyone who's fabulous all the time, and I'm about as close as it gets.
By the way, a week ago, I watched him play Brady, and he made a bunch of good plays and stuff against Tampa. The same defense that ate Aaron Rodgers alive, Goff faced him and beat him and was pretty good.
I think we're just getting a little bit crazy with the moving off the quarterbacks thing. Like, you're going to have bad games. You're going to have bad spells.
Right.
There's adjustments and things you're going to make. Everyone's not going to be fantastic all the time.
Derek Carr, who we all like now, has had bad years. Like, back-to-back bad years, and now we all like him. Like, this is the hardest position in sports, quarterback.
Did you see Sunday? It was a disaster.
Disaster.
Sometimes you just have to have a bad day or a bad couple of weeks. It's how it goes. Bench Jared Goff.
Absurd. Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Live News.
You know, there's all sorts of stuff going on right now. You know, it's in coaching, too. So now everybody wants Harbaugh fired at Michigan, and he's no good. It's Albert Breer joins us, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz, the best or nothing. Monday morning quarterback Albert Breer. So I'll get to the Harbaugh thing in a second. I was saying, listen, I don't think Arians and Brady are the perfect couple. I mean, they are different. Brady's very efficient, detail-oriented, the short pass game, he mastered it. Arians is more go deep, blah, blah, blah. But I look at Tom's numbers this morning, and he's 65%, 95 passer rating. They've been inconsistent, but outside of that Bears and Saints game, you mostly get 29 points a game without many, you know, here's the numbers, 95 passer rating, 28 touchdowns, 11 picks. I do think, I'll throw this out at you and have you respond to this. I do think it's possible Arians has retired before. If they struggled over the next 4 games, 1-and-done in the playoffs, and looked ugly, I could see Arians stepping aside and a Josh McDaniels get a shot or a Brian Daboll, a younger guy. But in the end, are we making too much of the Arians-Brady struggles?
No. I mean, I when you go and you sign Tom Brady, you're implicitly telling everybody we're competing for a championship. You don't sign a guy at 43 years old if you don't feel like that's where you're at. And right now, they're not at that level. And I do think that there's some frustration on the part of Brady. And yeah, the numbers are there, Colin. But remember, the bar for him is way up here as far as individual performance goes. And this is a very, very different offense. So I think you're starting to see signs that Bruce Arians, Byron Leftwich are starting to bend a little bit to the way Brady wants to run the offense. But, having talked to some people around the league, I know that really, the perception is that they're not running an offense right now. They're just running plays. And Brady's used to having such a comprehensive offense that has answers to everything, that marries the run game to the pass game, all of that stuff. And so I think that's where some of Brady's frustration comes from. And I think it's important. Somebody pointed this out to me last week. to like look at some of the older quarterbacks who've been in the situation. Brett Favre, when he went to Minnesota, Daryl Bevel was there. Daryl Bevel had been his position coach in Green Bay. Peyton Manning goes to Denver, right? They try to meld, you know, Mike McCoy's offensive system for about a half year with what Peyton Manning did in Indianapolis. And they got to midseason and they were just sort of like, the hell with it. We're going to run Peyton Manning's offense. They wound up running a version of what he'd done in Indianapolis. And so I think with these older quarterbacks, you know, in each of these cases, you see where the team comes to a realization. The best thing to do is to let the guy do what he does best. And hopefully the Bucs are starting to come to that realization. And maybe this becomes more Tom Brady's show than it has been.
You live in the Northeast. You know the Patriots well. And I lived there for over 10 years and watched every Patriot snap. And I said, you know, these wins over teams like Arizona feel great in the moment. But right now they draft about 15th. And I looked this morning, in the top 13 teams that are picking, I counted 5, Jets, Jags, obviously, teams like Chicago, probably draft a quarterback. Mm-hmm. You know, I said here, Jets, Jags, draft a quarterback, Washington football team drafts a quarterback, Denver, I think, has to consider it with how good quarterback play is in their division, and then I think Chicago and Minnesota would both roll the dice and draft, maybe not a roll the dice, and the Patriots at 15. Cam, like, I guess I'm asking you this. New England's probably going to win a game or two. They're not going to get inside 10. There's about 5 first-round quarterbacks. What are their options today? Are they going to re-sign Cam?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I guess what you're asking is, are the Patriots turning themselves into the 45-win NBA team?
Yeah.
Right? I think that there's some merit in that argument. I would just tell you, I think Belichick has to have this program competitive. I think it's a hard program to sell to players. And for everything to come undone in year one and not be competitive in year one coming out of the Tom Brady era, I think would make it very, very difficult for him to sell what's a very demanding program to players. Because remember, high school kids, college kids, outside of the kids who play at Alabama, really aren't coming up the way that they used to. And so I think Belichick has to keep the program competitive. I think that's more important than just finding the next quarterback. So I think what the best course of action here has been, will be, going forward for the Patriots is finding somebody that they're comfortable with, whether it's Cam or someone else, for the next 2 or 3 years, and then eventually going all out to go and get one. And I think the perfect parallel, Colin, is what Alex Smith was in Kansas City, where they had him. They knew he wasn't going to be their quarterback for the next 10 years, but he bought them time to find the next one, to pick their spot and go after somebody they really loved. And so I think Cam, you know, there's still a chance he can be that guy for New England, but I think their best course of action is to find that guy so they're not forced to overreach for one in 2021. And look, I mean, it's a strategy I think you're seeing Carolina employ too with Teddy Bridgewater. I think it's a smart way to go. And, you know, they hope that Cam can be that guy going into 2021. But if he can't be, maybe it's somebody like, I don't know, like a Matthew Stafford or someone like that.
I got to ask you about Jim Harbaugh. Again, this is just the overreaction Tuesday where now Harbaugh suddenly is a bum and can't coach. I think he probably stays at Michigan. He makes a ton of money. He has total control. Mm-hmm. And I think COVID has unraveled a lot of people. It's unraveled Penn State. I mean, it's just the reality is some have reacted well to it and some have not. But if do you think there'll be a team out there that calls Harbaugh? Somebody jump out to you.
Yeah. The one team that jumps out to me is the New York Jets. I've been told consistently over the last few years that Woody Johnson has a little bit of an infatuation with Jim Harbaugh. He, of course, is still in the UK, but his ambassadorship there is going to end soon. And I think that's part of the reason why you've seen, you know, the Jets a little slow to make any sort of big moves, you know, within their football operation. But whenever that comes, I would think Woody Johnson would at least want to kick the tires on Jim Harbaugh. Remember, he interviewed Jim Harbaugh well before there was NFL interest in him. He actually interviewed him all the way back in 2009 when Harbaugh was still new at Stanford. They wind up hiring Rex Ryan at that point, but Woody sort of kept an eye on Harbaugh throughout. So I don't know if Harbaugh's issues the last couple of years at Michigan would cause him to back off of Harbaugh, but I do know that there was that feeling there and that Woody's kept tabs on him over the years. And then the other one I think is sort of obvious, which is the Chicago Bears. I think if there was one job that Jim Harbaugh would really want in the NFL among the ones that potentially could be open, I think the Bears would be really, really attractive to him because he played there, because he was a first-round pick there, and because he had great admiration for the coach he played for there, Mike Ditka. So those would be the two that I would sort of keep an eye on just off the top. If Harbaugh was going to leave Michigan and go back to the NFL, would be the Jets and the Bears.
Carson Wentz, you owe him a lot of money. I was just saying, I understood when they signed him. There were risks, but his trajectory, completion percentage, passer rating, yards per game, all went up. And then last year, it should be noted, he had, you know, over 20 touchdowns, 7 picks, 4,000 yards, throwing to backups and scout team guys. I don't know what's wrong. Does he have a backup quarterback complex with Foles and Jalen Hurts? I have no idea. But again, what are their options in Philadelphia?
They're married to him contractually, so they have to make this work. And, you know, I think there was always going to be some level of change in coaching there. I'm starting to wonder if it might happen at the top. You know, I think that there's going to be a real deep dive into what's gone wrong this year, why the trajectory is where it is. You know, going from the Super Bowl to getting knocked out in the second round, last year getting knocked out in the first round. You know, I think that the owner there, Jeffrey Lurie, is going to really want to take a real look at everything that's gone wrong in the organization. And obviously Carson, because of the investment they have in him, is going to be a huge part of that. Again, they're married to him for next year. They're married to him the year after that. That's why, like, going to Jalen Hurts for two plays yesterday didn't make a whole lot of sense to me. You know, but really, I think for right now, they've got to commit themselves to trying to make it right. Yeah, they lost Andre Dillard and Brandon Brooks and Lane Johnson, and the skill position players aren't right now. But, you know, when you pay a quarterback that much, Colin, part of the deal is he's going to have to make do with less. He was able to do it last year. He hasn't been able to do it this year. And really, because, again, they're married to the guy for the next couple of years, it's incumbent on them to figure out why.
Yeah, but three offensive linemen they thought would start are not there. And this is part of what you saw last night. Wentz is always forced to make quicker throws. Albert Breer, great talking to you, bud.
Awesome. Thanks, Colin. Appreciate it.
We're really seeing something in sports. There's all these new GMs. There's a go for it. You're seeing it in the NBA. You're seeing it in the NFL. You saw it in baseball. And there's a handful of NFL teams that I think that it's in their DNA. They are go for it teams. And I saw a little bit of it last night. I'll talk about that. Plus Herd Hierarchy, top of hour two.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
RecTech Grills with a Q, RECTEQ.com, built by grillers for grillers. You can start the grill driving home from the grocery store. It's good to have you in. Top of the next hour, Herd Hierarchy. Brian Westbrook will stop by as well. So, you know, I've been on this for a while. It used to be in the NFL, you just didn't make trades. Jimmy Johnson was the first really coach, general manager in the league that made huge trades. I think the New York Giants had made one trade ever before Jimmy Johnson made his big Herschel Walker move. And so now you have a lot of young GMs. And, you know, for years and years, we always credited the New England Patriots with hoarding all their draft picks. Yeah, but they don't have any good players. So I'm watching the Seahawks last night, and they literally turned around their defense by giving up a draft pick for Carlos Dunlap and giving up a bunch for Jamal Adams. And you know what they don't miss today? Any of those draft picks. They're 7-3 and in first place in the toughest division in football. You look at the LA Rams. I live in Los Angeles. Joy and I do. Aaron Donald, they drafted, but they went out and got Jalen Ramsey and gave up a first-round pick, and they went and got Andrew Whitworth, the left tackle that saved Jared Goff, and they went and got Robert Woods in a trade, and they haven't had a first-round pick since Jared Goff. You know, you start looking around and go look at the NBA. This is why the Green Bay Packers, who they pay their house off, they put all the max money in the 401k, but they never go for it. And what is Green Bay missing? A star player on defense. Is that you go look at the last three NBA champions. The Lakers gave up a ton of picks. People complained, oh, they're giving up four players, all these picks for Anthony Davis. You know what they don't miss today? Picks. This is the worst draft of my life. Remember when Toronto got Kawhi Leonard and everybody said, it's a one-year rental. He doesn't like Canada. He doesn't like cold. You were right. I forgot what they gave up. Nobody cares. By the way, Golden State, Kevin Durant, nobody cares. It's like, I love the draft, but especially the NBA draft. The kids are coming in right out of high school. I mean, they got 1 year of college. They go right to the NBA. They're not ready to do anything. Even the guys I like Ja Morant, who I really like, he's at 1 through 10, he's at about a 6.5, 7. He's still got to mature, playing big games. Zion Williamson can't get his body right yet. So in the basketball, I would give up everything for a star. I'd give up 10 years of number one picks for Anthony Davis. Who cares? I mean, look at how many players and draft picks the Pelicans got this morning. They were still forced to sign Brandon Ingram a month ago to a massive contract, which you're stuck with that now for a good player, but he's a B player with an A contract. It just doesn't matter. Like, Jamal Adams for Seattle, I thought they gave up too much. I don't think a safety is worth two first-round picks. I still don't love that. But this morning, he and Carlos Dunlap have saved the defense. They're just in every – I mean, just look around everything right now. Look around all – Mookie Betts, the Dodgers. Dodgers were winning their division every year. And then they gave up a bunch of prospects for Mookie Betts. And you watch the games and I watch the games. You're like, oh, yeah, yeah. I'll tell you what they don't miss, prospects. What's happening to the draft is that – and, you know, the draft still has value. But in basketball, the players are coming in younger, less experienced. There's a long runway. I mean, LeBron James has basically said, I don't want to play with Andrew Wiggins. Give me Kevin Love. I mean, Kevin Love, we knew he wasn't a great defender. He wasn't the most athletic guy. He was a good rebounder. LeBron's like, I'll take that. Everybody's like, Andrew Wiggins, 45-inch vertical. He's going to be amazing. No, give me Kevin Love. Yeah, I'll take Kevin Love. I mean, LeBron James doesn't want to play in Miami. Didn't want to play with young guys. Give me Ray Allen. Give me Shane Battier. Give me limited veteran guys. So the reality is when I look at the Green Bay Packers, people are like, why don't you ever kind of give the Green Bay Packers love? And my takeaway is they're the guy that maxes his 401k and pays his house off. Green Bay doesn't have enough playmakers. They need like a playmaking linebacker and another pass rusher, and I don't think they're going to get past teams like Seattle and New Orleans. New Orleans went out, Emmanuel Sanders. Let's get another guy. Add to our play. So I don't know. When I watched Seattle last night and Carlos Dunlap and Jamal Adams, I'm like, this is the future. This is what. And in Los Angeles, I saw the Lakers do it with AD, the Dodgers do it with Mookie Betts, and I watched the Rams do it with Jalen Ramsey. Huge moves. I mean, give up all. The Dodgers gave up best prospects. The Lakers gave up all these picks and players, and the Rams went out for Jalen Ramsey, and I don't remember what it was. It could have been two firsts. They gave up first round picks in all three of them. It is totally paid off. The 80's a title, Mookie's a title, and frankly, Jalen Ramsey's great because he's a big corner and you can put him on DK Metcalf. That's why the Rams match up with Seattle pretty well. They match up with Arizona pretty well because you can put him on Deebo Samuel, San Francisco. You can put Jalen Ramsey on DK Metcalf. You can put him on DeAndre Hopkins, who are big, big targets. And you can see DK Metcalf, these little corners don't stand. He's like Iron Man in the Avengers. Like nobody can guard him. All right. Also, I want to say this about New England. We were talking with Albert Breer about New England. They're a little bit trapped. Go show the draft board again today because we can start talking about this stuff. Now we're getting to week 10, week 11, week 12. If you look at the draft board right now, so here's the current order. So let's just talk quarterbacks. Jets are going to take Trevor Lawrence, number one. Jags are going to take Justin Fields, number two. So the Bengals don't need a quarterback, and the Cowboys aren't drafting one either. Either the Chargers, and by the way, either is Philadelphia, and I don't think Carolina will. Teddy Bridgewater, you can win a lot of games. They got bigger needs than quarterback right now. Washington will. So Jets, Jags, Washington, first eight, all taking quarterbacks. Then you get into these Detroit and Atlanta, where you got to start thinking about it. In Atlanta, I would. In Detroit, I'm not sure I would with Stafford. They have bigger needs. Atlanta, I probably would. Miami's not drafting a quarterback, my guess. So, but Denver, I got to face Mahomes twice, Derek Carr twice, and Justin Herbert twice. I'm drafting a quarterback. They got plenty of players in Denver. They don't have a quarterback. So now we got Jets, Jags, Washington, Denver. I think Chicago has to draft one. So that is four quarterbacks by the 13th pick. So Minnesota may not, I don't know. So New England needs a quarterback. Jarrett Stidham's not the answer. They can stay with Cam for a couple years. Fine with me. But what's interesting for the Patriots, what you have to do here, what you don't want to do is give away a bunch of picks, because you're going to have to give away a bunch of picks to move up. But I was told by a general manager before, what the Patriots have to do is get to number three with Cincinnati. There's no value in getting to like five with the Chargers. Then on draft day, Carolina moves ahead of you. Then you've wasted all the picks and you get a worse quarterback. So it does look like we've got Trevor Lawrence is an A prospect, A+. Justin Fields is an A. I would say Trey Lance and Zach Wilson at BYU are very good prospects. And then Mac Jones at Alabama, he's something. I didn't think he was a year ago, but, you know, the people I trust and all the scouting stuff I look at, he is probably number five, and maybe in New England you go there. But That's kind of the state of quarterback play in the NFL. You know, I start every season saying we only need about three more teams with quarterbacks. And by week 10, I'm always like, we need about eight. We need about eight teams. Every year, it's the same thing. Herd Hierarchy next.